Welcome to Your Move with Andy Stanley. In his weekly 30-minute podcast, you will discover how to make better decisions and live with fewer regrets. So check out our website at yourmove.is for additional ways to watch, download, and share this message. Today's message is entitled Random Christmas. The ingredients in the Christmas story seem kind of random. An order from Caesar, a pregnant virgin, an angelic announcement, three wise men, and no room at the inn. Some of the circumstances you may be dealing with in this year aren't exactly what you'd want in your story either. In this message, Andy challenges us to respond to the seemingly random curveballs in our lives the same way Mary reacted to the curveball thrown at her.
Hey, as we move into the Christmas season, one of the things that I do every year as I get close to Christmas as a pastor is I begin rereading the Christmas story. Because as we get close to Christmas, you come to church and you expect the pastor to talk about the Christmas story, which of course, us pastors, that's what we do. Christmas and Easter, you kind of know what the sermon's about before you get there, which makes it a little hard for us, you know, because here we go again. So every year, I start way in advance reading the Christmas story, asking God to give me fresh insight, and asking God to speak to me through this story that we know so well, that has so much to do and is so central. And there's a feeling sometimes I think, you know, we could gather at this time of year and I could just read you the story and that should be enough because it's absolutely so profound. But this year, as I was reading it, I was struck by something that's true of me. I think it's true of you, and it certainly intersects with this incredible, incredible story. Isn't it amazing how we all, at different stages of our life, have an insatiable desire to make sense out of life? To make sense out of the details of life. That I don't want anything to be random. I want everything to make sense, and I want it to all fit together in such a way that I can stand back and look at my life, if this tree can represent my life for just a minute, and everything fits, and all the, you know, all the points connect, and all the dots connect, and everything that happens to me, I know exactly where it goes, and I can say, wow, everything makes sense in my life. And it is in all of us. This isn't a Christian thing or a religious thing. We just want life to make sense. You know, we met because we're supposed to meet, and then we got engaged, then I got that cool promotion, you know, my kid graduated from school, we had the birth of a child. You know, every time somebody hands me an event or I experience an event, I know exactly where it goes, and I want to make sure everything fits. In fact, this is so much a part of human nature, not just in the United States, but all over the world, that in every culture, in every language, there's actually terminology that we use that we don't think about it. In fact, you don't want to think about these phrases too much because they begin to fall apart. But we use terminology to reinforce this idea that everything has a purpose, everything's going somewhere, there aren't really any random events in life, that someday we'll be able to look back on our lives and everything will fit together. For example, we say things like this: everything happens for a reason. You ever said that? You ever heard somebody say that? And me, my skeptical, I don't do this, but I want to say, really? Everything? Like everything happens for a reason? Again, you don't want to start poking holes in this because it begins to fall apart, but there's something in you and there's something in me that wants to believe, well, even though I don't understand it now, everything happens for a reason. I don't believe in coincidence. You've said that. Or somebody say, well, what a coincidence. Well, I don't believe in coincidence. What does that mean? Well, I don't know. I just don't believe in them. You know, I think there's some sort of cosmic force, God, karma. I don't know, but I don't think there are any coincidence. I think it all fits together. You just haven't met the right person yet. What does that mean? It means someday. Well, wait. Based on what? I don't know. Don't ask me any hard questions. Someday. It's just, you just haven't met the right person yet. There's just, it all kind of goes together. I mean, I guess it wasn't meant to be. What does that mean? Well, you know, the reason it didn't work out, it's not your fault, and it's not his fault, and it's not her fault. It just wasn't meant to be. That somewhere out there, somewhere, there's a meant to be-er, and they put everything together, and so the reason it didn't work out for you, and that's another one we say, well, I guess that just didn't work out for you, is it just wasn't meant to be. Because there's something in you and there's something in me, we want it all to fit together. Now, here's another interesting question. Why is that? What is that in you? What's wrong with you? What's wrong with me? See, I have a black Labrador retriever. I don't think she worries about this. Okay, she gets up in the morning, we feed her, then she gets in the house as soon as she can, she gets on her mat, she goes back mat and goes back to sleep. I don't think she lays there going, I wonder how this nap connects to yesterday's nap and tomorrow's nap. And I wonder if one day, like, I'll put all the naps on the tree of my life and all those naps are gonna mysteriously come together and it's gonna be like, oh, now I know why I slept every day. You know, I just don't think my dog worries about that. I don't think any of your pets do either. But there's something in you and there's something in me. We just want it to make sense. Now, Christians have an answer for that. Christians believe that everybody, whether you're a Christian or not, or whether you believe in God or not, Christians believe that everybody was made in the image of God and that God is a purposeful God. And that God is involved in history. And that God sees things sequentially. And God brings order out of chaos. And God brings design into things that seem to have no design. All of that collides with the Christmas story because the Christmas story is in some ways the preeminent example. It's the perfect, it's the best example of God dipping down into the seeming randomness of life, the chaos of life, the insignificance, the meaninglessness of life, God dipping down and reminding the world that there is a plan, that there is a design, that history goes forward, that God is the God of history. And the Christmas story is the picture of God intervening and mixing it up with and being involved with the affairs of mankind and doing it in such a way that it becomes absolutely unmissable that there is a God who understands, that there is a God who knows we're here, there is a God who cares about us. So what I want to do is I want to read a portion of the Christmas story, and then I want us to come back to this whole idea and talk about how it connects with each of our lives. And I'm going to read from the book of Luke. Luke chapter 1 is where we find the Christmas story, or Luke's account of the Christmas story. And if you have a Bible, you can follow along, or we're going to let this kind of scroll up on my screen here for a minute. And Luke decided he needed to put together an orderly account of the life of Jesus so that the people who were coming along behind that generation would be able to understand what happened. Now, I want to read the first few verses of the first chapter of Luke, and then we're going to skip down to verse 26 where the Christmas story begins. But for those of you who aren't really Bible people, kind of skeptical, you haven't picked up the Bible since you were a child, you sort of have a picture of why the Bible isn't worth reading, and it's based on something someone told you, I want you to listen to how this ancient first century document begins and see if this sounds like fairy tale to you. Here's how he begins. Many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled among us. Many, not just me, many have sat down and tried to put together an account of the events that happened right here among us. Luke, you mean like among you, like you were there? Yeah, this happened in my lifetime. Oh. Just as they were handed down to us by those who from the first were eyewitnesses and servants of the word. So what you're saying, Luke, is the stuff you're about to write down, you got this from people who saw it happen. Yeah. With this in mind, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, I too decided to write an orderly account for you, O most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things you have been taught. Now, that doesn't sound like once upon a time in the city of Bethlehem, does it? That doesn't sound like long, long ago in a galaxy far, far away, That doesn't sound like, abandon your brain, leave your brain at the door and try to use your imagination. That doesn't even sound like religious talk. Here's a guy who says, I've investigated it. I've talked to the eyewitnesses. I want to make sure somebody writes down an orderly account so that future generations know what happened here in our midst. So here's Luke now. He says, I've investigated all this. I've looked into it carefully, and here's what I discovered. In the sixth month of her pregnancy, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth in a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of David. Joseph was a descendant of David. And then this next phrase, I don't even know how to explain this. Imagine the drama, imagine the soundtrack, imagine everything that hung on this next phrase as Luke is writing this down. The virgin's name was Mary. He had no idea. He had no idea what would happen in the future as a result of him telling this story. Cathedrals would be built. Wars would be fought. Buildings all over the world would be built. Missionaries would be sent. Books would be written. Heretics would be burned. People would give their life in order to get this story out of the first century. People would give their lives in order to get this story translated into a language that the common man could read and understand. And Luke in the first century is going, well, I don't know about all that. I just want to make sure the next generation knows what has happened here in history, on the ground, among us. The virgin's name was Mary. Now, we don't know anything about Mary. Mary was probably a teenage girl. Her life looked like this. Her life was pretty much planned out. She's going to get married. She's going to marry a guy that actually she probably hadn't even met yet. His name would be Joseph. And then they would live wherever her parents told her to live. She would meet him maybe on her wedding day. And this would be Joseph. Joseph, this is Mary. You guys, we don't know if you love each other or not. You work that out, but you will get married. You're going to have kids. You're going to give your parents some grandkids. And if you live long enough, which you probably won't, you might even get to meet your own grandchildren. And then you'll die. No one will ever know your name because you grew up in this little dusty little place in the middle of nowhere and during a time when nobody really cared what was happening in Israel. And you would just be another nameless person who came and went and was thrown into the dustbin of history. So what? It's over. That was Mary. Just another random thing, a rather random life, random series of events, random children that would grow up. Some of them would survive, possibly many of them wouldn't. But God, in this period of history, had decided to touch down to remind you and to remind me, thanks to Luke, that God is a God who is involved. And what may seem random to us is purposeful in the mind of God, and it's why you seek purpose in your life. Verse 28. The angel went to her and said, "Greetings, you who are highly favored." We'll come back to that. "The Lord is with you." Mary was greatly troubled at his words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be. In other words, are you the good witch or the bad witch? Okay, I've never seen an angel. The Lord is with me. Are you the Lord? I mean, imagine how overwhelming this was. And he says, no. This is good news, okay? But the angel said to her, "Don't be afraid." Why? Because she was scared to death. "Mary, you have found favor with God. You have found favor with God. You will conceive." Now look how certain all of this is in the midst of all this just chaos and randomness around her. "You will conceive and give birth to a son, and you are to call him Jesus." You know, you're writing this down? Okay. "He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord God will give him the throne of his father David and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and his kingdom will never end." And I'm telling you, if she had the presence of mind to think about it, this word right here would have thrown her off. Wait. His kingdom will never end? Angel, I don't know if you're paying attention. You realize that the nation of Israel has not had an independent kingdom for 500 years, and you're telling me this son of mine is going to have a kingdom that never, ever, ever ends? Who would believe that? Who could believe that? I'm just a teenage girl. I'm going to have a son. He'll grow up and have some kids, and I'll die, and he'll die, and no one will ever know we ever existed. But she wasn't worried about the kingdom word. She was worried about something else. Verse 34, "How will this be?" Mary asked the angel, "since I am a virgin." And then, according to Luke, who's writing in a language that was not spoken by Mary and the angel, Luke chooses words that are difficult. Luke chooses words that preachers and theologians, we kind of skip over because you don't want to pause too long in this part of the story because honestly, it just gets a little weird. But Mary asked the question that any teenage girl would ask when she was told, "You're going to have a baby while remaining a virgin." And so very delicately, I suppose, the angel answered, "Well, Mary, the Holy Spirit will come on you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. So the Holy One to be born," this is awesome, first century, Luke's writing this down as he's, you know, interviewing these eyewitnesses. "So the Holy One will be born, he will be called the Son of God." Mary, teenage girl, you're gonna have a son. And here's what his reputation is gonna be: Son of God. And it happened. Even Elizabeth, your relative, is going to have a child in her old age. And she who was said to be unable to conceive is in her sixth month. Look at this. For no word from God will ever fail. Now, here's what we can't really get our arms around with this story. There were about 400, a little more than that, but about 400 years since the Jews had heard from God. Theologians call this the 400 years of silence. There's 400 years between the end of the Old Testament and when Jesus showed up. 400 years of silence. Now, there wasn't silence in the world because during those 400 years, some amazing things had happened. The Babylonian Empire rose up and everybody thought Babylon is forever, but it wasn't. because the Persian Empire rose up, and everybody thought, well, the Persian Empire's forever. They lasted almost 400 years, okay, for about 400 years. In other words, people were born and died during that period, and when they died, they thought, well, Persia is forever, but they weren't. Because Alexander the Great came along and it was the Greeks' time to rule. And everybody thought, well, Greece is forever. Look what Alexander the Great has accomplished in his short lifetime. But then his world was, his empire was split up. And eventually Rome came along. And when Mary was living and in the midst of her life, everyone thought Rome is forever. And this silly angel said, no, your son is going to have a kingdom and his kingdom will last forever and ever and ever. And everyone in the world thought, no, Rome is forever and ever and ever. Just like we thought Greece was forever and ever and ever. Like we thought the Persians were forever and ever and ever. Like we thought the Babylonians were forever and ever and ever. And it's like God showed up in history and said, no, don't you understand? This isn't about the plans of man. This is about the will of God. And this will transpire. And every one of those kingdoms and every one of those empires came and they went by my declaration, says the Lord. And while you look at the details and while you look at the history, you may not see my hand, but understand life is not random. That I am the God of purpose and everything happens according to my will. But then Mary's life got back to normal. In fact, Mary's life got back to subnormal because the angel went away. And from what we're told and what Luke could discover, and I bet Luke interviewed Mary because John was taking care of Mary at this time. And according to Mary, and according to the historical record, the angel Gabriel never showed up to Mary again. But I bet she wished she had. Because all of a sudden her life got very, very complicated. She was a pregnant teenage girl with no explanation as to why she was pregnant. And I guarantee you there were days, and for those of you who are Catholic, I don't mean to be disrespectful to Mary, but let's just use our imagination for just a minute, okay? I'm sure there were days when Mary's like, Angel, you gotta come down here and explain this to my mama and my math teacher because they're looking at me funny, okay? And I'm not about to tell them that an angel appeared to me. I need an explanation. And then eventually she met Joseph. And fortunately, Joseph had a little heads up about this whole thing as well. And then I talk about bad timing. Caesar Augustus decrees that everybody's gotta go home and register for a census. And Joseph says to Mary, I got bad news and then I got some really bad news. The bad news is, you have to go with me to Bethlehem. And the really bad news is the best way to get there, you're gonna have to ride a donkey. And I realize that you're pregnant. And now this favored of God, remember favored of God, the angel said it twice, you're favored of God, that you're special. God knows your name. Miss favored of God is gonna take a donkey ride for almost 120 miles while she's pregnant. And it takes them so long to get there. You know this story. It takes them so long to get there that when they get there, there's, remember this part of the story? No room in the what? There's no room in the inn. Hey, angel, you didn't tell me about this part, okay? Miss favorite of God would like an out. You know, I'd like to find a room in the inn. You should have reserved a room, okay? I mean, the least you could do. I remember, son of God, kingdom's gonna reign forever. I'm about to birth this special baby. And I get there, you're telling me, not only do I have to make this trip, there's not even room for me in the inn. And her story continues to deteriorate. And you can show up at any point and say, why would God allow that to happen? Why would God allow that to happen? Why in the world would God allow that to happen? And then she gets a heads up that Herod finds out a king has been born, and Herod is angry, and Herod's jealous, and Herod wants his name to be forever and ever and ever. And we come to that tragic part of the Christmas story that we can't pause and think about for very long because it's so unsettling. It has the ability to overpower all of the romance that we associate with Christmas. Because early one morning, as people were waking their children up and getting ready for another day, Herod's soldiers showed up at the end of town and they went through this city where they believed Jesus lived. And they slaughtered every single, probably, child 2 years old and under. Oh yeah, their assignment was to make sure they slaughtered the males. But Roman soldiers were thorough. And they would rather go back and report to Herod, yes, we killed a few little girls as well by accident, than to go back and say, I think we missed a few little boys. And by the end of that day, every single parent with children 2 years old and under had had their babies ripped out of their hands and slaughtered in a random, senseless, purposeless expression of jealousy. And for the rest of her life, Mary lived knowing that whereas God warned me and saved my little baby, God did nothing to rescue the other little children from that little town. What's the purpose of that? What's the point in that? I mean, okay, wait, God, if you had the presence of mind to warn me, couldn't you have sent the angel Gabriel just to kill Herod? I mean, wouldn't there be ways around this? And so they fled, and they went 200 miles, so they finally got to Egypt. And they spent time in Egypt. And again, you look at any of these details, it's like, why? What's the purpose? How does that fit in? That doesn't make any sense. And then years would go by. And Mary would experience the most unimaginable pain and sorrow that any mother could ever experience as she stood outside a courtyard and heard her firstborn son beat to within an inch of his life. And she saw the gore, and she smelt the gore, and she saw her son with a crown of thorns dragged out into the street and forced to carry part of his cross to die an unimaginable death, the most humiliating death possible. The Romans had perfected the art of crucifixion to make sure a criminal lived as long as he could possibly live, to be his example as long as he possibly could before he would breathe his last breath. And this mother watched her son die. And yeah, we romanticize it. And yeah, we know it all worked out. But she stood there and watched it. Miss highly favored of God. Miss the Lord is with you. Miss and his kingdom shall reign. He will reign forever and ever, and his kingdom shall never come to an end. And in those moments, it was just another random act of Roman violence with no good end in sight. And yet, had God lost control? No. This was the very epicenter of God's activity. The very moment when it looked like everything was lost and God had lost control was at the crosshairs of God's greatest involvement in the world as he sent his son into this world to pay for the sins of mankind. That thing in you that wants order, that thing in you that wants purpose, that thing in you that wants everything to work out for good to somehow make sense, that is the thumbprint of God. And on Christmas, we are reminded that even when it seems random, even when it seems purposeless, even when it seems to have no good, even when it seems that this is an unredeemable illness, this is an unredeemable death, this is an unredeemable job loss, this is an unredeemable situation in my marriage, there's nothing good that can come from this, and there's no way this is part of some overarching plan. At Christmas, we're reminded, God with us. And that thing in you, that thumbprint of God in you, that wants it to fit together, is confirmed at Christmas as God sent his son into this world, this random world, this seemingly purposeless world, to do an extraordinary, extraordinary thing. Years later, about 25 years later, the Apostle Paul, with the advantage of hindsight, would look back at all of this and the life of Jesus and the resurrection and his time with Peter and all of the disciples, and he would write letters. And in one of their letters, a letter to the Christians in Ephesus, here's what he wrote. He said this: "In him, we were also chosen, having been predestined according to the plan of him who works out everything in conformity with the purpose of his will." In him, in Jesus, this is sort of his technical way of saying what we've just talked about. In him, we were also chosen, having been predestined according to the plan of him who works out everything. Do you know what everything means? Everything means everything. Who works out everything in conformity with the purpose. There's that word. See, this is what you long for. This is the order you long for. This is the "I want it to make sense" I long for. According to the, in conformity with the purpose of his will. Mary didn't say it exactly like that. It was so technical. When the angel Gabriel finished with Mary, when the angel Gabriel finished telling Mary, this is what's going to happen, this is what you have to look forward to, of course, she didn't know any of the details. She didn't know about the donkey ride. She didn't know about Herod. She didn't know about the slaughter. She didn't know that one day she would watch her son taken away from her and crucified. And she didn't know that he would one day rise from the dead. And she didn't know that 2,000 years later, we would gather in her son's name once a week, and in many cases, more than once a week, and that 1/3 of the world's population would know his name. And when they heard her son's name, they would think Son of God. She didn't know any of that. So at the end of her conversation with the angel, she said what I hope you can say, and I can say, I'm the Lord's servant. May it be to me according to your word. I am the Lord's servant. May it be to me according to your word. You know what the big takeaway for me from this is this, that, you know, I don't know what you've been told about faith and how faith has been defined for you. Maybe you grew up in a church that you've been taught that faith, you know, is what moves God. I'm convinced of this, that perfect faith is not faith that moves God. Perfect faith isn't the faith that moves God. Perfect faith, this is perfect faith, perfect faith is the faith that moves us to trust God when it doesn't seem like he's gonna be moving. Perfect faith is the faith that moves us to trust God when it doesn't seem like he's moving. Perfect faith is the faith that says, yep, we met just like I'd planned. Yep, we got engaged just like I planned. Yep, we got married just like I planned. And yep, we had the birth of a child just as I planned. But then life handed me a divorce, and life handed me a job loss, and life handed me things that I didn't plan. And my desire isn't to move God back into my plan for my life. My plan, my faith is designed to help me trust God in spite of the fact that life isn't moving according to my plan. Perfect faith says what Mary says. Perfect faith says this, I'm your servant. May it be to me according to your word. I'm your servant. May it be to me according to your word. Here's the good news. Regardless of what life has handed you, regardless of what you're experiencing, that thing in you that wants to find purpose there, that's a good thing. That thing in you that says it can't be random, there has to be more, that's a good thing. That's the thumbprint of God. It is the reminder that God is active in this world. He's active in your world. He has a plan for your life. And that, as the Apostle Paul said, everything, everything, everything is ultimately in accordance and in conformity with his purpose in this world.
Thanks so much for listening to Your Move with Andy Stanley. We hope today's podcast will help you make better decisions and live with fewer regrets. So check out our website at yourmove.is for additional ways to watch, download, and share this message. Now it's your move. Do something with what you've heard.